Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Carlos Galasso, Baseball America Draft Podcast. I'll just start by saying we're both kind of tired at this point. Like I just got home from the All-Star game. Carlos has been home for a couple of days, but I mean, we love it. I mean, don't get us wrong, but it's a week. I mean, it is a week.
Yeah,
it's a
takes
month.
It out of you.
It takes a lot out of you. I'm going to bed. We're recording this on Wednesday night at like 8:30, and I think I'll get done recording this and maybe just go straight to bed.
Right.
But we're not going to talk about the 2026 draft right now because that's so last year. That's old news. That happened in the past. We're looking to the future. So what we're going to do today, and I think it's a good time to do it, is BaseballAmerica.com, we have rolled out our way too early mock draft, which, by the way, if it's anything like last year, we'll nail 1-1 a year before the draft. Because, by the way, getting Rochelowski at 1-1, not that unusual, but it was the White Sox were going to pick Rochelowski 1-1, and the draft lottery hadn't happened. But we got that, so good job, Carlos. But we have our way too early mock out, and then we also have combined our top – our first combined list. We have the high school list and college list separately. And then a year out, we combine them. And we we have our combined 2027 top draft prospect, top 100 draft prospects for now. It's 100 now. It'll go to 200. It'll go to 300. It'll go to 400. It'll go to
500. Oh, man. Don't talk about expanding that draft class quite yet, JJ.
Next week, right?
We've got some time yet before that, hopefully.
Yes, down the road.
But yeah,
down
this
the road
is, in the future. This is really, it feels crazy every year. It's like we're halfway through processing what we just spent a full year building up to, and then all the teams are now signed, all the classes are signed. We're starting to see signing bonuses, and it's like, nope, time to focus on 2027. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, I was watching college national team. We're kind of like this week watching them over stream on video, and then for me, I don't know if you'll be able to get out here, but at least I will be at Cary a lot of this next week watching the top high school players. So it really is like summer circuit is here and we're diving into next year's class. And
so that is what we're doing today. And this will be a big picture look at it. We have 51 weeks to go in depth. So if you're here and you're saying, I expect 20 minutes on Dylan Seward today, you're not getting that today. Don't worry. I mean, like one of the things that I did, I want to go on a little aside before we get to that, which is one of the cool things about doing this podcast, doing this video series on YouTube as well, which is still a podcast, but has video version of it. When the draft rolled around, all these players are getting taken, all these things like players moving up, players moving down and all. And I do feel like, look, if you are a Baseball America subscriber, I feel like that you had a very good understanding of what was going on. The ups and downs, players moved up, players moved down. It's never going to be perfect. We want it to be better every year, but we had that. But I'll say this also, like, it was amazing how many videos I could link to that day. It's like, hey, if you want to know more about this player, we spent 20 minutes or 15 minutes on him here. If you want to know more about this player, here was a 10-minute discussion we had about that player and all. Like, we really did. Like, Zion Rose is rising up boards. Okay, well, here's when we talked about Zion Rose. Jacob Lombard, there are concerns about his hit tool. Well, here's where we spent 10 minutes talking about that. Like, Rochelowski, why we think he's going to be number one at the end of the day. The case for Grady Emerson, who goes two, to be in that consideration as well. All those things were there. We'll do that again for the 27 class. We're going to roll into that. But to start that, Carlos, big picture, a year out, the 2027 MLB draft class looks like it's going to be blank.
It looks like it might be not quite as good as the 2026 class for me right now. A year ago at this time, we were walking into a 2026 class that was hyped beyond anything I had experienced at Baseball America. And to be clear, I do think the 2026 draft class fell short of the expectations that the industry had for it entering the summer. And I think even fell short of the expectations the industry had entering the spring. We did not see the same number of college hitters and college pitchers take strides forward like we saw in 2024. when you had guys like Charlie Condon, JJ Weatherholt, Travis Bezzana, Chase Burns, Hagen Smith, Jack Caglione, like all those guys went out and performed at a really high level. And a class that was seen as like fine entering the spring became quite good.
Oh, let's just start. Let me just interrupt. I did a piece of Baseball America coming off the All-Star game.
Right.
That's one of the best drafts, the best first rounds. I feel confident saying right now in 2026, 2 years out from that draft, it's going to be one of the best drafts the last 15 years. And I say that because we had three top 10 picks in the All-Star game. And I know All-Star games are a little bit the tangent of 1 year or the next or not, whatever. There are a lot of drafts where you won't find three All-Stars in the top 10 pick all years and put them together, and you're not going to find that.
Right.
To see that, and to see also, I do believe that by this time next year, by year three, I would be surprised if we don't see that all 15 of the top 15 picks have reached the big leagues, which I'm not saying that's all crazy. Of them are going to be great, but that would be...
That is crazy.
That is crazy. So yes, the 2024 class, like a class that can be considered like, that's fine, and then it goes on to be great. I'd say the recent ones we have that are great are 2024, I think you'd say 2019, which, by the way, five of the top 10 from that class were also in the All-Star game, which is remarkable.
Nice.
But then the flip side is you can also see a class that is thought to be good and then ends up being way less than you think it is. Like, I think 2022 would be the one that probably fits in that group.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, we'll see what happens. Like, there's a lot that's going to change. We're just now starting to dive into this class full time. I think the conversations that come from scouts also are going to be more detailed and evolved now, because the scouts that I'm talking with are finally going to be focusing full time on this class, and the conversations I have with those evaluators will form my opinions of how we're viewing the class. But I'd say on the college side right now, we wrote about this a few months ago, I think, when we were just kind of impressed by the amount of stuff that was in this college pitching class. I think the college pitching in the 2027 draft has a chance to be the resounding strength of the class, like the demographic that we think of when we think back on the 2027 draft. It has a chance to be a really, really good college pitching class. I think beyond that, there are probably questions. The way Ben Badler talks about the high school class in general in 2027, it does feel like the depth of the class is maybe a little bit lighter than we typically have at this time. I know a lot of the players in the 2026 high school class that we were excited about entering the summer didn't live up to those expectations and their stock fell, but the starting point seems to be at a lower level than a year ago at this stage. I think at the very top of our class right now, I'm probably burying the lead a little bit here, but we have Dylan Seward, shortstop out of California. And I do think that just based on his tool set and track record, if he were eligible in the 2026 draft, there's a real case for him to have gone over Grady Emerson this past year. He does seem to have some of the strengths of a Grady Emerson in terms of the quick, compact, hitterish look in the box as a switch hitter, by the way, with the physical tools that we got excited about for both Eric Booth Jr. and Jacob Lombard. He's an 80 grade runner. He has a chance to be a plus defender at shortstop. I think probably power is going to be his biggest question. Like, he doesn't have Jacob Lombard physicality or raw power currently, but I think you can see with the way his hands work and the quickness and just some of the physical projection he has, I imagine people are going to start to feel pretty comfortable about that element of his game. So on the high school side, it does feel like it's Dylan Seward and then everybody else as we enter the summer. And then on the college side, I think there are a couple of different arms. There are a couple of different bats that I feel like you could make cases for at the top of the class. If Dax Whitney at Oregon State was healthy, I think he would maybe even be the overall consensus number one. Like, he probably would be above Dylan Seward if he were healthy. Unfortunately, Dax Whitney got injured halfway through the 2026 season. He had a season-ending elbow injury. He's probably going to miss most of the 27 season as well. Even then, he might be a top 10 pick even still, because I do think he probably would have been called and maybe still will be called the best pitching prospect since Paul Skeens. Like, it's that good what he was doing prior to being healthy. And then some other names here at the top, Thomas Valinkas, and hopefully we can figure out exactly the pronunciation. I'm sure I'm butchering it. I apologize if I am. Mississippi State left-handed pitcher. He was the most impressive arm at college national team trials. Brandon Lawson, the shortstop at Florida. I think offensive package and chance to play shortstop are going to have him talked about at the top. And then just two more hitters I'll mention here on the college side that I'm really intrigued by. Gavin Kelly, catcher and second baseman at West Virginia, and Landon Harrison, our Baseball America College Player of the Year at Arizona State. I think those two may be the best, like, pure hitters on the college side. All those guys are at the top of our class now, and then beyond that, we'll figure it out throughout the summer.
So I do want to get in a little bit more to some of the top guys and what to look for, and we'll do that right after this quick break.
Many people have this problem. I want to eat healthy. I have the willpower. I don't have the time and the organization. I need help. What do you do?
I mean, you go to Factor. I got two boys that are looking for the gains, and they always come in the house looking for food. Now they have actual healthy food that is great for them. And you know what? It's ready in the fridge for them to pop in and make it right away.
And they have meals built around your goals. It could be weight loss, overall nutrition, gains, more protein, fresh, never frozen, over 100 rotating weekly meals, including globally inspired flavors like Mediterranean and Asian. I get all kinds of different salads from Factor that I love. Quick, easy. They can be ready in 2 minutes. Head to factormeals.com/foul50off and use code FOUL50OFF to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscription only while supplies last until 9/27/2026.
So, Carlos, we're back. And so with Seward, you've laid it out. Like, I feel like that, I think we even talked about on the live show, post-draft. It's all a blur at this point. But this is a guy who has a very good chance to be kind of a pole-to-pole, like, much like Rock Chulaski was. Rock Chulaski was our number one prospect this time last year, and yes, there was never a moment where that dipped the whole way through. A lot of times it does, right? And a lot of times it may be because the player that was number one is disappointing a little bit. Sometimes it's because the player number one is doing everything that we expected a player number one to do, but someone else shows up and you're like, oh, that guy's even better. With Seward, you mentioned that the power, like, the reason I could see him being not the number one pole to pole is kind of the power projection, right? Like, would that be, because it seems like the rest of it's pretty, pretty well already established. Is it the power going to be the question that we're going to, that everyone's going to be focusing on all summer, I guess, and kind of going forward?
Probably. I'm not sure how much he's going to get beaten up for it over the summer, but it'll definitely be the case where if you feel like it's a little bit light in that department, worse than just like, oh, we think it could be average moving forward, it'll definitely be the case where everyone who's going to scout him next spring will really hope that he has a strong offseason, will hope that he gets into the weight room, adds some more strength, shows a little bit more physicality. Maybe it'll be the case of like a Bryce Terang. I remember him entering his draft year, I believe it was the summer of 2017. He was a 2018 draft.
Yeah.
So summer of 2017, he was the top player in the class. He had the X on his back, as all the top players do. And then everyone did seem like a little bit underwhelmed by his performance because it was never like blow you away. And then during the spring, there were questions about like, how much impact is he going to have? He wound up going somewhere in the middle of the first round, slid a little bit from that. I do think even at this stage, Dylan Seward is twitchier. He's more explosive. He is a better runner than Bryce Terang. Bryce Terang was regularly a plus runner. It sounds like Dylan Seward is a legitimate top of the scale 80 grade runner.
So he's a Bobby Witt runner.
He's a Bobby Witt runner. It seems like, and again, to be clear, I have not seen Dylan Seward much in person. Ben has seen him a lot more than I have, which is why I'm so excited to get out.
Right now you're getting, the geese handed over. Now you get to see him
100%. And so, yeah, I think power is probably, maybe he comes out this summer and really swings and misses much and the hit tool becomes more of a question. I don't expect that to be the case given his reputation as a pure hitter, but yeah, I think power is probably going to be maybe the tool that gets most scrutinized with him? Is it more of a Grady Emerson to where like people are like, okay, he has solid power. Is it going to be Eli Willits where it's like, hey, we don't know how physical he's going to be and Eli Willits is proving that wrong? Is it more Derek Curiel, Bryce Terang, like thin frame, like what's the body going to look like in the future? All of that we'll have to figure out throughout the summer and fall and next spring. But I think that probably will be the biggest question mark for him.
So with the college class on the hitter side, is there a hitter who, like, to be honest with Landon Harrison, who had the best year of all these guys as far as the college hitters, he had an incredible year. I do feel like that there's probably a ceiling there, mm-hmm. just with his position, his profile, all his everything, where it's like, if he ends up 1-1, it's probably because someone else in this group or some others in this group have fallen back, mm-hmm. because he just doesn't. I struggle to come up with the closest I can come up with to a guy who kind of fits that profile. And he had a better season, even though Andrew Benintendi's season was incredible. But like the year that Andrew Benintendi kind of moved his way into that top tier, mm-hmm. which was kind of a little bit of an out of nowhere season at that time, there's still a limit to what you're going to wear outfielder, especially not a, we're not talking about the next, King Griffey Jr. in center field or anything, an outfielder, potentially a corner outfielder, where they're going to go, college outfielder. Right. Is that kind of open up the spot for like, is Gavin Kelly, like we said, is a catcher second baseman? And as much as I like Gavin Kelly, I don't like it as much as when we're talking about Von Lackey, who I had a lot of way to move up last year, but Von Lackey was a catcher. I know he played other positions,
right?
But there wasn't a question about, is this guy going to be a catcher? So I guess what I'm kind of leading up to in a very way too long-winded way, does Brendan Lawson have a chance at the end of the day to be the number one college position prospect, partly because of the position he plays, or are there limitations with him as well?
Yeah, I think there are probably limitations with all three right now. I mean, I think all the reasons you mentioned for Landon Harrison being a questionable 1-1, like you don't typically have a left field profile who's playing, again, like very limited defense. I think he has one of the better hit power combinations in the class, but you typically don't have players who you're looking at as like you're maybe a fine left fielder go 1-1 with Gavin Kelly. He doesn't look like a typical 1-1 profile physically, defensively. He's a great pure hitter and he did hit 19 homers. So I think there's sneaky pop there. But if you look at some of the just the power projection with him, he doesn't feel like your classic 1-1 either, especially if you think maybe he's more of a second baseman than a catcher. I'll be really curious what scouts are thinking about him defensively. But like we had Gavin Kelly at the top of our college list entering CNT. And what I was hearing just early feedback on was like, Gavin Kelly is not the 1-1 in this class. And so then you move on to Brendan Lawson, who we haven't seen because he's Canadian. He wasn't playing with the college national team. He's not played.
Good reason.
He's not played in the Cape this summer. And I do feel like from an offensive profile perspective, from a physicality perspective, from the position that you write beside his name, he fits much more of the like traditional top of the class profile left-handed hitter with power, with on-base value, move from first base to shortstop. And I think that shortstop question for Brendan Lawson is going to be his big question. Is Brendan Lawson really a pro shortstop? I'm fairly skeptical of that right now. We're obviously going to bear down on him a lot in the fall and in the spring to see. I also think there are some questions when you look into his hitting numbers in conference. If you look at his conference performance with Florida, I have some pure hit tool questions with Brendan Lawson that I think are going to just open the door. And I would say for the entirety of this college pitching demographic, we haven't had, I don't think teams want to see arms leading the way at the top of any class just because there's a lot of risk in those profiles. But I do think if you are going tool for tool, and looking at the track record, guys like Dax Whitney, and especially guys like Thomas Valinkas, they check far more boxes of prototypical 1-1 candidates than the hitters do at this stage. and all the chatter I've heard so far in the class. And again, let me just emphasize, it's very, very early. We are in the discovery process. Our board will change. I do not view our current board, especially on the college side, as anywhere close to where it was a year ago, where it's like, hey, Rock Chulowski, he is a definitional 1-1 candidate. On the college side, it is much more wide open. But right now, if I was to say who's most likely to go first, it would be one of those two pitchers for me.
Well, I'd say of the college side. I would say I think
of Seward, the college side. Yeah. And yeah, of the college side. Seward, I think Seward makes a – again, we always said Grady Emerson in a non-Rock Chulowski class, perfectly viable 1-1 candidate. It could be like the 2025 draft where Eli Willits, just well-rounded, hitterish shortstop. Dylan Seward, more toolsy than Eli Willits at the same stage. If none of these college players address the weaknesses we're talking about, if there's not someone else who vaults up the board, it could very easily just be Dylan Seward wire to wire.
Okay, to lay it out a different way. This year, we had one college pitcher taken in the top 15 picks, right?
I'll take the over for next year.
Next year, I think we could have 7.
Yep.
The way it lays out. Like now, which are those 7? I mean, 7's a lot, right? I know that there is a predilection among teams that to take hitters, take position players they can't at the top of the draft. But the thing that does stand out about this is that we've talked about some of the guys, but you could throw in the William Schmidts, and you could throw in the Aiden Kings and the Camden Clarks, and you could go down.
Please say Ryan McPherson. Yeah.
Ryan McPherson. You could go down this list. Landon Mack, Chris Lavonis, like Cason Evans. There's a lot of names here of guys who not every one of them is going to be a first round pick, but they all have first round kind of abilities. The one other thing, when we talk about strengths of class, we just came off a very good college catcher class. Mm-hmm. This one's got a chance to be really good as well, doesn't it?
You might say this one, a quote-unquote catcher class. Yes. I do feel like
there are a lot of bats who catch.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll be curious how many of these catchers teams feel confident will catch moving forward, but at least listed as catcher
I will say this. I don't know how many Ryder Helfricks and Von Lackeys defensively there are in this group.
Right.
There are a lot of Daniel Jacksons, though.
I agree. Know. A lot of power, a lot of hit-first, offensive-oriented, very physical college catchers. Yeah, that could be another trend next year. The one thing I feel like is lacking, just overall, as I'm scanning down our list, just prep middle pitchers. Infielders.
Prep pitchers, too. Sorry, you're saying outfielders?
Middle infielders.
Middle infielders.
I mean, I think USA, like Team USA's team is probably evident of this, but like if you're looking at the weaknesses of that team in the lineup, I do think it's both the middle infield positions. I think from a prospect capital standpoint, the middle infield seems to be a question for me. There are a lot of these interesting corner profiles. Take Davis at first base, Brody Johnson at third base. There are not, and I mean, maybe this is more typical. Maybe we've been spoiled with the likes of Rock Chulowski and J.J. Weatherholt in previous years. And we'll see what Brendan Lawson does. Maybe he proves me wrong. Maybe Gavin Kelly is a legitimate second baseman, but that's an unusual profile. Travis Bazzano was the first ever second baseman to go 1-1 overall for a reason. So that's a question mark. You're questioning the high school pitching.
That's the other thing I think is kind of like, and again, I get it. Like at this point, that is a group that should generally be like.
Well, let me throw you. So I think one of the things at Baseball America that is a little bit frustrating at times is like how long the feedback loop is to figure out where we miss, where we got right, how we can improve the process. So we're always thinking about this. And I do think one of the areas over the last 2 years in particular that we've felt like we're probably a little bit too light on the preseason list is having college pitchers too low and having high school pitchers too high. I do hope and feel like this class is a great kind of bellwether for us to adjust in that area. And part of my reason why I think that we have those systemic biases is because a lot of the times over the summer, the top college pitchers are not pitching at all.
They disappear.
The high school pitchers are pitching in these abbreviated outings where they're throwing really hard. And the hitters are seeing a different arm every time up. So it's set up, like it's not set up, but like the environments are very beneficial towards pitchers. So a lot of them go out and have success. And it is very much like a, they're in front of us right now. We see them. And so we rank them high. They end up sliding some of the college guys who we just haven't seen in a while, or who go from reliever to starter, or who are injured. They come out, they produce, or even just your vanilla college pitchers who don't have the most explosive stuff. Those guys go up the board. So I do hope that this year we at least are in a better starting point for those demographics. And maybe it's also the case that even relative to a normal high school pitching year, that's down. Although we're already getting questions about why is Straker Pence not in our way too early top 10.
We are, and we do not have him near there right now. Now, I get it. I get the questions. He's famous. He's very famous right now, and he's very good. Like, let's be clear. He's not like, we're not like, oh no, we forgot to rank Striker Pence. But okay, so why is Striker Pence not in our way too early top 10? Which I would beyond the answer of because we have him ranked. Let me make sure I rank it properly here. But 43, I believe.
Yeah.
So okay. What does he have to do? Again, just give a very quick, he throws really hard, but we haven't seen really the full repertoire or the aspects of it that and high school pitchers who throw 100 at age 16, it's a very small subset, but that's
right. I mean, I guess we have him right now in a similar range to where we had Savion Sims a year ago. At this stage, they're probably reasonable comparisons, big 6'6". Savion Sims is 2 inches taller than that, but pitchers who can throw 100 and Straker Pence, again, I think so far this summer, he's thrown in very abbreviated outings. Teams are just going to want to feel more confident that he is more of a pitcher than just a pure thrower. Again, not to say that he's just a pure thrower. I mean, we have him ranked as a top 50 prospect right now after reclassifying. We have seen really good breaking stuff from him. He's dominated in short stints, but it is the case. I think Ben mentioned this. If you just look back at the track record of pitchers who go top 15 overall in the draft. It's a very short list of high school pitchers in general. Seth Hernandez is an outlier at this stage. And so I think there are a lot of other high school pitchers in this class who are a little bit closer in terms of well-rounded arsenals, starter profiles. Connor Salerno in particular really excites me. We've seen him for a couple years now. And I think he just has a more complete starting pitching profile at this stage. So that's probably why.
So I kind of like how you laid that out. The one thing I wanted to point out to people is if you want an example that we just had of what Carlos is talking about as far as the high school pitchers, watch the Futures game, watch the All-Star game, right? We had literally on the All-Star game, we had many of the best hitters in the world, and they were just getting mowed down. Why? Because every single pitcher out there was going out there for one inning and shoving, and then it's like, I'm starting to figure this out. Don't worry, you got a new one coming in the next time. It's right. Hard. It's hard to hit in those situations. But I do think the other part that I'm kind of fascinated to see with this class, like you said, there are – I do think that if we're going to be interested in a good way about this class, last year we kept hearing about it, is the dearth – of true Friday night starters in college baseball, right? If you said, who are the must-see Friday night starters week in and week out, like the guys who you're like, that guy's just going to shove in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Dax Whitney, sophomore, like the sophomore class had more of them last year.
Mississippi State had like four of them in the sophomore class. Like we've heard jokes from scouts who said, hey, I'm just going to basically buy season tickets to Mississippi State and just watch them all year because their entire rotation is just absolutely loaded. They could have three or four first round arms, which is insane. But yeah, I do think if you want to get excited about the class right now, get excited about Dylan Seward. He has a chance to be a really unique high school athlete who just checks all the boxes, and get excited about these absolute horses that are going to be running out routinely. We should not be lamenting the Friday night starters next spring. If we are, a lot of these guys have gotten hurt, and let's keep them healthy.
And if we are, then this draft class really will be
maybe 2 months from now, JJ will be talking about, hey, like all these hitters came out of nowhere, we're really excited. Like that can still happen too, but yeah, that definitely feels like the strength, just the sheer volume of pitchers who throw incredibly hard and they're going to come into the year with already really impressive starter track records. That's not super common.
It's not super common. The last thing I wanted to ask you is to kind of go back to the top. With Dax Whitney, I would say that the most optimistic viewpoint would be that, like, again, not most optimistic. It's far out. We don't want to get too far into speculation. But we have seen examples of pitchers who can't throw in their draft year going well, but you don't often see them going at the top of the class. And again, he would very possibly be throwing.
I was going to ask you this because it has been a few years since our top college pitchers, or just top pitchers in general, I guess Dylan Lesko on the high school side, but who is the last elite college pitcher who didn't throw and went top 10, top 15? Is it all the way back to like Jeff Hoffman?
Well, I mean, Jeff Hoffman did throw though, because he got blown out. He blew out early in the season. So like you saw him and then right. He blew out. The one that comes to mind for this is me and names. Stanford pitcher was taken by Cleveland and been like 19, and he made the Migleys, but he's not been. Okay, give me a second.
2019,
maybe 18.
Yeah, because even just like looking through our previous drafts, I'll pull up a couple of these and go through. But like this here, Jackson Flora, obviously the consensus 1-1 healthy all year. Tyler Bremner, Kate Anderson, Liam Doyle, Jamie Arnold, Kyson Witherspoon, all those guys were healthy the whole time through. I don't know if we've just been lucky in recent years to have good health. In 2024, we had Hagen Smith and Chase Burns. They were healthy all spring, although Hagen Smith had his injury questions prior to that. 23, Paul Skeens, we had Rhett Lauder, we had Chase Dolander. All those guys were healthy the whole year. 2022, Gabriel Hughes, Cooper Jerpy. Man, that was not a great college pitching class. Kate Horton, I guess the top end, there were guys that didn't pitch the full year. 2021.
Cal Quantrill.
Okay.
2016.
Where did he go?
2016, and Quantrill went, let me make sure.
So really my entire time at Baseball America covering the draft, we have not had a college pitcher in the top 10, top 15 who just missed their whole year.
He went 8th overall, and he did not pitch in an official game his draft year. He's still went 8th. So that was the
again. Right now, if Dax Whitney doesn't throw at all next year, it still seems hard for him not to go top 10. Like I think this is a talent that's going to fit there. So that'll be an interesting wrinkle. Like handling that, I've literally never done it. So
by the way, it's not fun because
it's not Quantrill, fun, right?
The thing I remember Quantrill is it was always very vague. It was like, Is he going to throw? Is he going to pitch in games? And it was like, he's doing some workouts, we've heard, for some teams. It was
I guess we have some recent example of this, because to tie this back to our just drafted 2026 class, Carson Wiggins didn't throw a pitch at all and is not the same tier of talent as Dax Whitney. He throws as hard, but in terms of everything else.
But example, though, of a guy who I would say at the end of the day, went really well for a guy who did not throw his draft year.
Getting slot at pick 27, incredible.
So what I would say with that, though, is like that's what one of the things that's going to be interesting about this, when we talk about this college pitching class, one thing with Whitney is he is hurt. Not as much the fact that he is injured currently, I would say, being a factor, because especially timing-wise, one could argue that in a crazy way, it could speed his path through pro ball, because his perfect timetable to return could be like he's drafted and then you're like, he's thrown zero innings this year. He's not worn out at all. And he's healthy, so why don't we send him out here for 40 innings before the end of the year? And he ends the year and it's like, oh, he reached AA. He's going to be ready for AAA next year. He'll be in the big leagues. Like, it's crazy that could be kind of happening. But at the same time, if he doesn't pitch, he can't push himself. He won't push down too far, right? Like, the hay's already in the barn that we saw Dax Whitney healthy was a stud who the risk will be, is this injury flukish or is this something where his injury risk, his delivery leads to an increased worry of his long-term durability? That's something teams will obviously dive into. They'll have biomech staff, you know, like diving in and figuring that out. But but he's got a kind of like a, he's kind of pretty well solidified near the top of this class. Guys could move ahead of him, but it's really hard for me to imagine if Dax Whitney's recovery is anything like normal and he doesn't throw a pitch before the draft.
Yeah. I just pulled up
very far down.
Just because I was curious, and I'll share it on the podcast here as we close, but I just pulled college pitching data from 2021 to 2026. Any pitcher who's thrown at least 100 innings, where would you guess Dax Whitney is in strikeout minus walk rate? My favorite number. So and I will say the success rate of these pitchers makes me even more confident in this being a useful stat.
Okay, so you're saying six drafts?
Yep, 2021, and this is multiple seasons too. So it's just your total volume, 2021. Good guess, he's seventh. It is Andrew Walters first, Chase Burns second, Jack Leiter third, Andrew Abbott fourth, who I don't think I would have ever guessed, Paul Skeens fifth, Parker Messick sixth, who's been tremendous, and then Dax Whitney seventh. Rounding out the top 10, Carson Palmquist, Kumar Rocker, Cooper Jerpy. Pretty good list of names there.
Pretty good list of names there.
Yeah. Cool. So, all right. Well,
that is the perfect way to wrap this up. Nice little cool tidbit here. That is the Baseball America Draft Podcast for this week. Our first of, I promise you, many, many hours, months. If you add this all up by the time we get to the next draft, like you said, I want to be ready. I'm going to listen to every draft podcast that they did to get you ready and throw in future projection, you know, like while you're doing that.
Yeah, if you did come to this pod expecting more 2026 recap, just hop over to the future projection feed. We have that for you. So we didn't want to rehash that all here.
And by the way, but if you did, I promise you that you would need to start your listening probably at least a week out. But speaking of the 26 draft, Carlos also did roll out analysis of all 30 drafts, like in-depth analysis. We're not talking this draft good, this draft so-so, this draft I don't know. This was like top of the pick.
It's like 25,000 words total for all these teams. So,
and by the way, so you can read all 25 or you can just pick out your team and read, you know, a lot, still a lot. There's that over there. There's also scouting reports on. We still got two guys to finish up, but everyone else in the top 10 rounds has a report. Many players outside the top 10 rounds have a report and a whole lot more over at baseballamerica.com. And by the way, we'll be rolling out where these draftees are fitting in the top 100 and top 30s in the next few days as well. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.